I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Alexis the Midwife.
And I'm Becky the Doula.
Welcome to Notes from the Mother Box, where we will be having real and frank conversations about the highs and lows of the parenting journey.
And if you enjoy this episode, don't forget to subscribe on Acast, iTunes and Spotify, and follow us over on Instagram.
So pop the kettle on, pour yourself a cuppa, get comfy and enjoy this week's episode of Notes from the Mother Box.
Today, we're really lucky to have the awesome Helen Thorne with us. For those that don't know her, Helen is a mother, comedian, author, one half of the fabulous Scummy Mummies, and a bloody lovely person to boot. Helen, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I am great, and what a lovely introduction. What a lovely thing to say about little old me. I am thrilled to be on this podcast. Thank you for having me. And I'm just sorry I'm not all we're all together in a room, but we're zooming together as best we can.
Which is lovely. So Helen, tell us a bit about yourself. How did you become one half of the Scummy Mummies?
So the Scummy Mummies started 7 years ago, almost to the day. And Ellie and I met doing stand-up. So we were both doing, like, you know, 5 minute sets at a fairly crappy stand-up event. And we just sort of fell in love, like our eyes met across the stage. And I just thought she was the coolest person. She was wearing a denim jacket. She was drinking a pint. And she did this fantastic set about, you know, being a mum and parenthood and being in a long-term relationship. And I just thought she was really cool. And we chatted afterwards and realised we both lived in Forest Hill in London. And then, just said, oh, should we meet up for a beer? And, yeah, and just became friends and then used to make each other laugh. And we used to go to comedy gigs together, both again doing our 5 minute sets. And then just one day Ellie emailed me out of the blue and said, I think we should do a podcast and I think we should call it Scummy Mummies. And that was sort of June. And then we recorded it and then we put it out in the July. And because she's really techie, her background is she's a video games journalist, a really successful one, and has been on TV and all sorts of stuff. And so she said, look, I can do the tech stuff. Let's just create something. And we put it up and there wasn't much around that kind of flavor of podcast. About parenthood. And, you know, blogging was still a very big thing. That's how parenthood was being kind of discussed in that kind of forum and that platform. And it just has gone from strength to strength. And now it has been downloaded 4 million times and is listened to in 150 different countries.
That is incredible.
Yes. We're really proud of it. And then we started the podcast in the July and then, because we'd both done stand-up, we thought, well, why don't we do a live show? And I think you guys have been to the live show. The live show is very different from the podcast. The podcast is an interview. The live show is like sketches and songs and all sorts of things. And we thought, oh, let's give that a go. So we wrote like an hour show and put it on at the Lewisham Fringe.
Amazing.
The very, very, very salubrious Lewisham Fringe in the November. And then that had a great response as well. So everything we've sort of done has done well. And then a few years later, we wrote a book. And yeah, and everything's sort of escalated. And then coming to the crescendo last year of doing a fully sold out Edinburgh Festival run. So, and that was like a month of performing every day. So that was really exciting. But what is the most rewarding thing, I think, not just like creating stuff and hanging out with Ellie, but how the comedy, or what I was going to say, I think the most rewarding thing is the response from other mums and people for what we do. That is the most rewarding thing. And I'm sure you're the same in your professions, is what it does to other people and what it means to other people.
I think that
everything that you're saying and how much you've been listened to and how much people embrace you. And I've got lots of different friends, genuinely, live all over the country, friends in Yorkshire, Bristol, London, down here in Brighton, who've been to see your show. None of them know each other. They're all very sort of different characters who have got so much out of it. And what it tells me, and I knew this anyway, but it just really consolidates it with me, is that humour, when we are going through big life events, is just absolutely essential. And I sort of think back, I was talking about this with Becky, when, I know this is a slightly different thing, but when my dad was diagnosed with cancer, I can't tell you the amount of inappropriate humour that we had while he was on his cancer journey. Subsequently, really sadly, he died. He didn't make it, sadly. But the humour then that got us through as a family, my mum, my sister and I, in the darkest moments, it lifts your spirit. And it just, it turns an eye on those highs and lows, those corners of being what makes us human, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we crave that. We crave that release, and yes, and we crave that comfort of humour as well. And I think, you know, and I think we all agree there are some dark moments of parenthood, yes, and motherhood and loneliness.
Definitely.
And also those moments where you just don't feel like you anymore.
Yeah.
And you've lost, you know, you just can't find who you were and everything is different. Everything is wonderful and you've gained so much, but you feel the losses very deeply.
Totally.
And so I think, you know, and I'm not pretending what we do is particularly sophisticated, and you know what our brand of humour is like, but it taps into something that is quite raw and quite, you know, so many audience members saying, going, oh, it's what I've thought, but I haven't said out.
Yeah,
that's
out loud. Yeah,
it gives
that's
us exactly what I was thinking.
Doesn't it? It gives us permission
totally
to not love every minute. And I know, like, my eldest is 14, and when she was born, I think Facebook was just coming out, and there wasn't a platform to have those conversations. There wasn't a narrative that said it's okay to not love every minute, actually. And I remember going to play groups, and there was this sort of very Stepford mum vibe, you know, everyone was sort of really smiling, but totally dead behind the eyes. And it was really,
we all know that look.
And it was really isolating, because I thought, I remember sort of rocking up one morning. I'd had an awful night with Ella. She was a nightmare sleeper. I was really tired. And all the mums were like, how are you? And I was like, well, actually, I nearly put her on eBay this morning. And it just went dead. Like, no joke, no laugh. And I was like, oh, these are not my people. And I just wanted somebody that would go, yeah, right, isn't it, you know, and be able to kind of laugh, like you say, laugh about it. And that's what I love about your show, is that it makes you just crack up at all the stuff, and it makes you feel quite united with other women. You're like, you're all going through
totally
it together. So
I agree. And I think people come and see you, Helen, they come and see you and Ellie, and I just think you say what they're thinking. And especially if they're a first time mum and they still feel like they shouldn't be saying those things. I'm three kids down the road now, so I'm perfectly happy to have a whinge and a whine on the regular. But perhaps they think, no, I should be enjoying all the moments. I should be just absolutely overcome by gratitude. But it's so unhelpful, isn't it, to not be able to just say, you know what, the last couple of days have absolutely floored me.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we sometimes do those bring a baby along gigs, which, you know, different vibe, let's say, to the late night drunken debauch fest that is, you know, our shows. But Ellie and I, we did this show once too, and they're quite young new mums holding these babies. They looked fucking horrified when we were saying some of this stuff, and they looked kind of shell-shocked. We're like, don't worry, it'll make sense in a few years, you know, because their babies weren't walking or weaning or toilet training and all that sort of stuff that we know is very tricky. I think that's really true. And so many times we've got like NCT groups who come out together, and it might be their first night out as a group, and they're usually ones in the loo throwing up because they haven't had a drink for a long time and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it's really important. I think from the get-go that you realise, you know, there's going to be some dark moments. And the best advice I got from a friend was, as she said, some days you're going to hate it. You're just going to hate being a mum. And it's hard. But the next day you won't. But that's it, you know. So that was good advice.
I think it's good to talk about the fact that it can feel boring and relentless and laborious. And it's kind of like, obviously alongside all the the joy and the, oh God, I've made a human being, this is miraculous. Yeah. But I think the two can coexist. You can love your kids and still have a bloody awful couple of days and think, where did my life before I have children go to, you know, and grieve as well.
Yeah.
And I say that to women in the clinic. They come in and they're almost quite apologetic about the fact that they're not loving every minute of it. And you're like, how you feel about your baby and how you feel about your whole identity changing are two very different things. Just because you're struggling with your new identity change doesn't mean you don't love your baby. Like they're such separate. But in our society, it's this narrative, isn't it, that we have to just be happy all the time and not talk badly about our children and not ever moan about it and be grateful and all the stuff that, of course, we are. But it is boring sometimes, you know. Lex and I always laugh about that sort of feeling like this life of servitude. And it's like, what about me?
Exactly.
Yeah,
I just remember, you know, having money in my account, you know, just a tiny bit of money, especially when I had two young kids and working part time. And I thought, oh, I could get the kids some new things and them some new shoes and all that sort of stuff. And I was just out of the habit of actually even treating myself. Mm. Like I just thought all the money I have, I should be, you know, they should be having start right shoes and they should be, you know, another lovely trip to the zoo or the museum or whatever. I think I was just, you just forget about putting yourself first, even just for a tiny little bit.
I remember when Toby, my eldest, was a little baby and I spent 3 hours making him a quinoa pastry Annabelle Carmel quiche while I was weaning him. And you know what he did, obviously, was he just took one look at it and threw it on the floor. And I remember crying in the kitchen about it. And I think I just, after that, it was like basically Ella's kitchen all the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Just squirt it in.
We just put ourselves under so much pressure, don't we?
Yeah,
one of my favourite things about your show, and Lecky's got a really good story about this that I think, was it your sister-in-law told you? Was you know, your confessions that you get from your mummies? And what was the one, Lex, that you had?
Yes, I don't know if you remember this one, Helen, but one of my friends was saying about one where a mum had gone to kiss her child goodbye at the school gates or something. I'll let you tell the story. Do you know what I'm going to say?
No, please say it, because it's like one of the best moments of my life. Please say it, Lecky.
Makes me laugh. But
I think the kid was a bit emotional going into school. And the mum went down, standing beside the male teacher, you know, give mummy a kiss before school starts. Mum goes down to kiss the child. Child moves and the mum kisses the teacher's groin by mistake. Is this ringing a bell for you?
Yes, yes. It's one of my favourite confessions of all time. And the crowd lost it, like just went absolutely wild. And then she won.
Yeah.
That is like one of the best ones ever. And she came up on stage, fist pumping. Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. It was really funny. But that is like the most horrifically embarrassing experience. And I think it was like the first day of school. So that's how she started that relationship with that teacher. Oh my God. It was so good.
Have you got any other good ones?
Oh, yeah, hundreds. But one of my favourite ones was someone was describing they had their posh auntie and uncle over for lunch. And they said, children, go upstairs and get dressed. And the older two came down looking, you know, very respectable. And the four-year-old was just taking ages. And she came down the stairs wearing her mum's French maid dress, holding a fairy wand.
Why did they find it?
Where did they find it?
This is total over-disclosure what I'm going to say now, but it's still one of the funniest moments I've ever had as a parent. So I had a fertility journey to get pregnant with my eldest. And during that time, I bought some fertility lubrication, right? So it's meant to make it easier for the swimmers.
Yes.
So it was in my side drawer. And a couple of years later, I just hadn't moved it. And I actually had a child by then and he was a toddler. And the builders were in doing our bathroom. And I remember Toby toddling out of my bedroom while I was having a conversation about tiles and handing enthusiastically the fertility lubrication to Dave the builder as a gift.
So good.
They know, don't they? They just know.
Yeah, we've had many similar ones on the podcast, but when a child said, I know where a plunger is for the toilet, and then went into the back of the cupboard and pulled out her mum's dildo because she thought it was a toilet plunger. Oh my God. And she's like, how did she know it was there? Why?
They just have a way, don't they? No. Going back to the Edinburgh Festival thing, because I've been to the Fringe, the festival, a couple of times, and I bloody love it. It's such a it's such a wonderfully brilliant place to be. It's just fun on overload. How was it for you guys actually going, you did a month up there. What a joy that must have been. How was doing the shows up at the Edinburgh Festival?
It was just incredible. So we had a flat for a month. We had a flat for a month and we did a show every night. I think we did 25 shows in a row. We had one night off in the middle of it. It was an absolute buzz. And because we'd always said we were going to go to Edinburgh when we felt ready and we'd done shows for years and we thought, right, let's do it. And so we got ourselves a nice flat and we treated ourselves just really well. Like we'd do the show, go out for a drink, go out for a nice meal, have a sleep in, maybe go out for lunch, have a nap, then do the show. Like we just, it was this amazing kind of holiday, but it was exciting to be part of the broader comedy scene because we just tour as a duo. And so we're not doing like, you know, the Saturday night, Friday night comedy clubs. And I think people have got a bit of more of a community. And so it's really nice hanging out with other comedians and feel like we're part of that group now. But just having a different audience every night and audience from around the world coming to see us was great. And also a diverse audience in terms of, I mean, yes, there were lots of mums who came, but we also got young people, old people, people who just, you know, heard about the show and thought they'd like it. And I think that was really satisfying in a way that the comedy kind of translated to them broader than parents. Yeah. So that was really, really exciting.
And also to be able to just fully emerge, you and Ellie, and what you love to do and what you're so good at. I mean, you know that Becky and I have written a couple of books and they're during that process, we've taken a couple of weeks and we've gone and stayed at my in-laws have a little cabin in Devon and we've completely worked on the book for like a week each time. Mm. And the first time was even better because our illustrator came with us and it was so fun to be able to talk about what we wanted to talk about and to really get down to the nitty gritty of what the writing was going to be about. And I guess not have any distractions, perhaps. That was just brilliant, wasn't it, Becky?
We found when we were trying to write, which you guys must have as well, you have your session, you get together and it's usually before pickup and you just get into the flow and you're like, oh, I have to stop and go and get the kids from school or kind of. So it was nice to go and just completely hide away and fully immerse ourselves in it and do nice things,
and not get dressed and just eat salt and vinegar crisps for lunch in our pajamas.
Perfect. We lived above a Subway, so there were a couple of mornings / you know, late lunches where I did go down in maybe pajamas with a coat and just caught myself.
Nice. Student life.
Yeah, it was great.
Reliving it.
No, it was great. It was really good. But Edinburgh is open till 5 a.m. every night. And so it never ends. And it's really exciting. And just seeing, you know, you'd be walking down the street and Eddie Izzard walks past you. You're sort of amongst, it is like being at like Glastonbury for a whole month. You kind of really feel excited by it. So I think we're definitely not going to do it this year. And we sort of said, if we keep doing it, we'll probably do it every second year because it's really full on and a big ask on children and things like that. But they were like, we want to stay the whole time next time, mummy. I was like, never. this is mummy's special time.
Talking of children, we love a birth story. How were your pregnancies and how were your births?
Yes. Well, I must say that I was very, very lucky. I had two very easy, straightforward pregnancies. Had a bit of morning sickness. That was about it. And I had two home births. And so both of my children were born in the lounge in a blow-up pool and didn't have any stitches. Just had really, I mean, people are listening to this podcast going, what a cunt. What a terrible bitch. But I loved my births. I loved them. I did lots of pregnancy yoga. Mm. And so I was very much into this thing called the golden thread breath.
Yes,
and
love that.
I basically was bovine in terms of my all fours and mooing, but that's how I communicated with my midwife was my sounds. I was really, I feel really positive about both of my births. And one baby was 8 pounds 3 and the next was 9 pounds 11. Sometimes I wish I had some stitches. I didn't have stitches for either of them. May account for a few things. But both were very calm and, you know, it did hurt. I'm not going to say it didn't hurt. But, I felt really confident and really proud of my body for doing it. So, it's not particularly scummy because I had like candles and classical music and all those sort of things. But, it was just for me,
I just wanted to try home birth, probably purely out of laziness because I don't like leaving my house. But I had a really confident midwife. She was like, if you want to do that, let's give it a go. You know, the hospital's 10 minutes down the road. You know, let's see what happens. And the second birth, my son, there was a student there and that was her first birth. And so that was a really lovely thing. And I think it was halfway through labouring and they're like, do you mind if a student comes? I was like, fine, anyone can come in. That's at that sort of stage. But yeah, I was with a practice called Oakwood Midwives, which I think is now called Juniper or something like that in Southeast London. And they were all fantastic. But I live on a cul-de-sac here in Forest Hill, and all the women my street have had home births.
Wow.
And we're all different shapes, sizes, ages, all the things. But I don't know what it is that we've all chosen to have. It was just the thing that this street did. And all the midwives delivered all these babies on the street. So it's a sort of, it's a really interesting kind of look at it, because we all decided to do that and it worked out, which I know is the odds are against us. Like there's going to be an intervention somewhere along the line. But
I don't think it's a coincidence though, Helen, because I do think there's something about what sort of becomes the status quo, or what you see your friends and your sisters and your family doing. It. I talk a lot about this in hypnobirthing. Is like when you see it around you, if that's like the sort of social ecology and that's what's happening, it gives you confidence to kind of embrace that as the norm almost. So so Brighton, for example, has a really high home birth rate. And I think it's because it just kind of ripples out. Like if people hear that people have had a positive home birth, they're like, well,
definitely,
maybe I'll give that a go too.
I think having a good team as well, like you say, you were really confident in your team and they'd done all the other, you know, women on your cul-de-sac. I think when you're confident in your support team, that really helps as well, doesn't it? Kind of, I think I tried for a home birth the first time. And it was going beautifully, lovely, nice and relaxed. And then the heartbeat went a tiny bit funny. You know, you sort of weren't quite sure. And my midwife panicked a little bit and it really panicked me. And then my contractions stopped. And it was really interesting for me because I'd worked with women throughout birth before having my own kids, which was obviously very different, because then you suddenly, you know, nothing prepares you for having your own baby because you're like, I'll be fine. And then you're like, ah.
Breathe. No.
But actually, it was, you know, we always talk about fear being your worst enemy in labour and it getting in the way and interrupting all the hormones. And that was exactly for me. I just shut down. My body just shut down and I just stopped contracting. And we had to then transfer in and I had to have, you know, a bit of help to have her. But it was really interesting for me to see that that definitely happens. You know, that fear sits in and your body goes, nah, I don't feel safe. So
yeah, I think that's right. And yeah, there was a really robust woman called Jackie, who's from Glasgow, like a that kind of stocky Scot, who was fantastic. And she's like, have some sex. I was like, I don't want to have sex. She's like, bit of nipple stimulation. I was like, no, I don't want it to touch me. No.
I want things to come out, not go in.
Oh, no. I'm so glad we now tell women to express colostrum as a way of, you know, so we say, you know, from about 37 weeks, whereas for me, they kept saying, just go home and play with your nipples. And I was like, oh, I've got the laundry and the washing and I just don't really feel like playing with my nipples right now.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, at least if you're actively doing something, you're like, oh, okay, I'm getting the colostrum out, you know, sort of.
Yes, it feels a bit more medical than sexual. And I think that's the switch in your brain. You're like, no, I'm doing, this is the thing. Honest. But yeah.
Totally. And what about going into the postnatal period, Helen? Like, how did it feel the first few months, especially with your first?
I think I was so hung up about being the perfect mum. I don't think that did me any good. Mm. I was in like an NCT group and they were friends. I'd only been living in England for 2 years. Yeah. And so as a, you know, I was an Australian, I was living in Cambridge at the time. And yeah, I think I didn't have any like really close, really good friends. I mean, on the phone, of course, but it wasn't like a mate could just go, right, I'm taking you out for a cup of tea. So I felt I had to be a particular way. And I sort of looked back and going, just calm down, Helen. You know, you didn't have to do all those sort of things. And I was so determined. So I think, you know, the second postnatal time was so much more chill because I would just sit on the sofa eating biscuits and I wasn't going to every single play group. And I remember taking Matilda when I think she was about 3 weeks old and just wanting to do baby yoga and all the things and putting so much pressure on myself. So absolutely. I think, yeah, and I'd had, I think for the first 3 weeks my mum was there, and then for the next month my then husband's parents came out, and I found actually really stressful more than helpful because I just wanted to hold my baby, and they were like, oh, we want to hold the baby because we're here from Australia for a short time, and that was a bit of tension between us because I was like, I just wanted to get the breastfeeding and the bonding and all that sort of stuff, and I felt real pressure to hand the baby over all the time, and I didn't want to do that. Yeah, so I think, and now looking back at that now, I should have just articulated that better. But so I think there was, yeah, definitely at times where I was a good sort of confident mum, and, you know, the Matilda was thriving and all that sort of stuff. But I was just, there's lots of inner turmoils and about it all. But yeah.
I think it's stuff we've been drip fed as well throughout society, aren't we? You know, like as soon as a woman in our culture over here anyway, as soon as a woman has a baby, you know, the amount of times you hear people say, oh, I saw her on day three, all dressed up, walking the dog. She looked amazing. And it's like, we congratulate women. And it wasn't until I did some training abroad where they're so strict about your postnatal recovery, and you would have been bollocked and dragged home and put back to bed if you were out dressed, you know, fully in makeup on day three. And almost like you were congratulated for resting if your house was a mess, if you weren't made, you know, if you hadn't washed, and that was what you were supposed to be doing. And it was a real brain thing for me because I just thought, oh God, this is exactly how it should be when you look at the physiology of what happens to your body after birth. But we're just not told that, are we, here? And like, our narrative has never been that. It's always kind of pretend like nothing happened, and, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, I went for a 45-minute walk on day three. My husband said, oh, let's get her registered at the thing. Why don't we just walk? And I was like, yeah, why don't we walk? And my mum was so angry with him. Yeah. She's like, she needs to be in bed. Like, she doesn't need to go for a 45-minute walk to the registry office to... And I was like, what was I? Yeah. But you're absolutely doolally.
I also think, Becky and I always talk about this, is that I think you do have adrenaline in your system. There's a lot of hormonal changes going on, especially specifically the week after the baby's born. Yeah. And we sometimes can, you know, mistaken... that adrenaline in our system for energy, and we think we can go for a 45-minute walk, and then we're on our knees at 11 o'clock at night getting that bed dread because we know we're going to have a night of it feeding a baby and it's potentially on our shoulders, and actually it comes back to bite you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I had a really bad sorry listener for the detail, I had a really bad infected skin tag on my vagina, and I think it was because I was too active, you know, and the doctor had said, you know, when the skin rubs, you can form a skin tag. And I thought, actually, it's probably because I was doing too much walking and too much, and it was really painful, really. I don't know if you've encountered vaginal skin tags before, but it was not a very nice thing. And I had to have it burnt off at week 11.
No, my toes just curled.
Cauterized. Yes. Ooh. Yes. Burnt fanny.
Love. It's not appealing, is it?
No. And I think it was my body's way of going, listen, calm down.
I am a big believer in that. I think you can't ignore these signs when sort of your well-being gets compromised, whether it's that or mental health or, you know, extreme fatigue, whatever's going on, little signs, don't ignore them, because your body is quite clever at communicating with you and telling you enough.
Again, that's another thing I like about your show, is that it sort of gives you permission to not be made up and fully dolled up and completely, you know, and to sort of like, it's okay if you do let yourself go a little bit for a little while, you know, just while you kind of work out what's going on. And I remember the first time I saw you guys, I was like, I just wanted to like jump up and go, yes, I love you girls, because it was the first time anyone had ever, you know, spoken to that many people. That's the thing, right? For us, we're dealing one-on-one. There's only so many women we can actually access and share information with, which is why writing the books was so good. But I feel like your show does exactly the same. It just lets women go, do you know what? It's okay. It's all okay. And I love that. I think it's amazing.
No, that's what's really nice. So after the shows, we do a meet and greet, because there were so many times we would get off stage and people were like, I just have to tell you this or whatever. And so that's now become a bit of a tradition, and we sell our book and you know, sell a t-shirt or whatever. But most of the time we say, look, if you want to just come up and say hi, that's fine. And, you know, just to be hugged by, I mean, we talk about this now so wistfully, it was hugged by all these women. And people share, and you know these women who come up and they will say, Ellie and I will get the feeling before we've seen them, saying, I've had postnatal depression and your podcast really helped me and I feel like you're my friend. And I was like, come in, bring it in, bring it in. Come on, let's smash our boobs together. And I think that's again, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, that's been the joy of what Ellie and I do and what we've achieved is that connection with women and making them just go, oh, no, it's normal. I'm normal. Everything's fine. Even when it's not fine. So, yeah, so that's been really rewarding.
And that's such a massive point, though, Helen. It's like you're offering, maybe not even realising it, this community to women who perhaps at times feel lonely and isolated and they're judging themselves. And then suddenly you create this outlet for them. And it does not surprise me at all. In fact, I think Becky and I have had this conversation. I thought literally you would have some ladies who've been through, you know, mental illness would just really find you guys inspiring and kind of put a smile back on their face when they're perhaps experiencing some of the most challenging times of their lives.
Yeah, and nearly 5 months ago I became separated just before lockdown, and so Ellie and I released a podcast talking about that because we thought everything about what we do is honest and we've shared and we thought we need to talk about this. And I'd spent 3 months not mentioning being single on just out of respect for my children, and I wanted to feel ready as well because it was such a big life change. And so we did this podcast in which we basically talked about my separation and our friendship. And I have had literally hundreds of messages from around the world from women who did cry when they listened to me and Ellie cry, and but also words of encouragement from people saying, I've been through this, you can do it. So it was like they were giving me advice, which was really sweet. And I felt great comfort in these, you know, essentially strangers who had reached out to me. So that's really nice. And I feel now, and I've talked to my therapist about this, that I feel like I've got this platform now to talk about being a single parent. And I feel like that's quite a privilege to talk about that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
We both listened to that podcast, Helen, and it was...
I know, I was a mess, I have to say.
I'm so sorry, guys.
And do you know what? I think it was... There were so many levels. I just obviously felt for you and what you've had to go through, and just your friendship comes through so beautifully, like, you know. And then when she starts crying as well. And so I cried when I was listening to it. And then I went over to Lecky's and we were doing a bit of brainstorming about this session and writing down notes. And I was recounting that I'd listened to this. And I cried again when I was telling her.
By the way, that is absolutely true. We're very emotional.
Good,
Becky is the most emotional.
I'm like that in my relationship with Ellie. Yes, I'm the crier.
But again, it go back to it's what, you know, it's these different layers. It's these experiences that we go through in life, which these ugly moments in life, like I talk very openly about grief and losing my dad. And I talk about it so much with the kids. I never want to shy away from that and what that looks like and how that feels when you've loved someone dearly and something has been lost from your life in that way. Mm. And I think that, again, Helen, that validates women's feelings in their own lives about when they go through big changes.
Yeah, and one of the things, because I'm a very positive person and I like being happy and I like spreading happiness, but one of the things my therapist kept saying to me is like, you're allowed to be angry.
Yes.
You're allowed to be cross about this. Yep. And, you know, I'm not that I will go into any details about my separation, but you can experience these emotions. You don't always have to say, anyway, today's sunny and the kids are healthy, like I'd, you know, make all these lists of gratitude and all that sort of stuff going, I can do this. It's like, no, be pissed off. Be really, really fucking angry about it.
Yeah.
And let that out, because even if you think you're not angry or you're pretending or you don't want to be angry, it's still there. The rage is still there and you have to let it pass through you.
Totally.
Because it won't go away.
Definitely. And I see that so much in my work, you know, so I predominantly work with pre and postnatal women, but I then work with women all the way through their lives because they tend to come back. And often they've gone through stuff and, you know, there'll be a bit of a kind of a muscular tension that isn't really muscular. And I'm like, nah, it doesn't feel like the muscles. And I kind of fiddle about and we have a little thing and we do a bit of breath work. And then occasionally I'll say, feel like you're really holding on to something and then it'll all come out. And often it's anger, because again, I think as women we're fed this narrative that we have to be happy and nice all the time, and it's not okay to be angry as women. And I see it so often where women have buried, and what you see is it plays out in the body and it comes out as a backache or, you know, as clenching your jaw and getting really bad headaches. And we always say, if it doesn't come out front ways, it comes out sideways, and better to get it out the front way, you know. So
exactly. And it's just not a natural thing for me. And also to accept help, and this is what I talked about in the podcast, that I love you know, taking lasagnas to people and doing that and caring and all that sort of stuff. And it was a big thing to accept help and people going, I'm going to cook you a dinner. I was like, oh no, you don't have to, I'll just get a pizza, it's fine. And then just to me saying, that would be really nice. Thank you for making me soup. Like, it was just, and it was such a huge thing. And it feels so silly to accept a meal, but it was just that sort of, you know, always wanting to be the strong person, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And like, no, I need help. I'm not coping. Yeah. This is really shit. This is really hard. And especially in lockdown. And so people would like run, put a dish on my front doorstep and then go or like, and wave to them from the window going, thank you, bye. But I think that's like in parenthood as well. And I'm sure I was like that with my first child, just going, I'm fine. I know it's good. I can do this. Yeah. I will make lasagna myself. It's fine. It's you know, you're mental, absolutely mental.
We talk about this, don't we, Becky? And we often say, please just remember, and when I'm never teaching, you know, antenatal class or whatever, I'm like, it is an honour. It's an honour to help a new mum. It's an honour to support your friend who's going through a separation, to be allowed into that inner circle and to be able to care for them. And show your love for them in you know, sometimes the most practical of ways. So by allowing those people to come in, Helen, and do that, I'm sure that that's how they felt as well, that they could just offer up a little something, like a hug in a lasagna tray, you know?
Yes, exactly right.
And we always say as well, then you're opening up a dialogue. So if you accept help, which I'm getting a lot better, but I used to find it so hard, because like you, I like to be the one that fixes and helps and, you know, kind of... And it's hard, right, to play that other role. But when you do that, then you open up the dialogue, then people can ask you, and it feels, you know, because otherwise people stop asking if you're the one helping all the time, because they don't want to take the mickey and, you know. So it's really nice to kind of say, okay, I will accept your help this time, but then you ask me when you need it, and it, you know, and it goes around. And again, that's what makes us feel connected, doesn't it, as women, to hold each other up through those times.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It's really important. And it was just a very strange time, but now I'm much better at that. And now I'm much better at saying what I want, because I was in a marriage for nearly 22 years, or a relationship for 22 years, and always thinking about what the other person wants and needs, and like, oh, I need to check with him, or what does he want for tea, and all that sort of stuff. And now this freedom, now I go, I can do whatever I like. I can put that painting on that wall. I can play this music. So there has been so many wonderful outcomes from this separation as well. Just going, oh, this is just about me now and my children, and this is this new life. And so it feels really exciting about starting, you know, about new beginnings.
Frees up the mental load a bit, doesn't it?
Yes.
Definitely. Talking of wonderful outcomes, can we talk about the firemen?
Oh, yes. I will do that gladly. So 2 weekends ago, Ellie and I, for the first time, got to go away, right? We're in a bubble.
I loved that, by the way. I was like watching your stories and I was just feeling so much joy for you guys. You look like you had such a ball. I was like, go on, girls.
Lads weekend. So we went away to a little seaside town called Deal for the weekend. It's our friend's place. So they had gifted it to us as like saying, you need to get out and have some fun. Anyway, on the Friday night, I was like, oh, I just want to get rid of my wedding ring. Like, it has to be a symbolic thing. And Ellie was trying all these different types of oils from the cupboard. And look, I'm going to be honest, I was a size 12 when I was married. I am now a size 18 and very happy about that. but that ring was not going nowhere. And so lots of people on Instagram said, go to the fire station, go to the fire station. This is what they do. And I was like, really, really? And Ellie's like, right, we are going to the fire station tomorrow. So it was a 1 hour walk. We marched our way to the fire station, knocked on the door. Nobody was in. We're like, oh, oh. And then all of a sudden, Fireman Dan opens the door and Ellie's like, my friend needs to have her ring off. And he's like, okay, yeah, we can do that. In you hop. And then suddenly four firemen appeared, all very hot and muscular and hunky. And I was like, oh my God, this is like a fantasy. And Ellie and Jesse had to stand back, and we weren't allowed to film it because of all sorts of reasons. But yeah, they used a power saw and they sawed the ring off. It was a platinum ring. It took ages. They had to slip a piece of metal underneath, so obviously it didn't cut through my skin, but it was a power saw.
Yeah.
And then they got pliers. I had, like, they iced my hand, put it above my heart, massaged it, all this and stuff. And finally the ring came off. And it was amazing. And I say one man put it on and four men took it off.
Nice. I love that.
Yes. So it was quite symbolic and we all cried and it was lovely. And then, aww. Yeah.
We talk about that quite a lot, actually, in other cultures. They're really good at having rituals and ceremonies to kind of mark occasions, particularly motherhood. So one of the things that I noticed when I moved back to the UK was that, like, you have your baby and they go, okay, see you later then.
Off you
and
go.
You're like, oh, like, Where's my lovely, like, closing massage and my special soup that symbolises, you know, whatever. And I just think that, you know, when we go through big transitions in our life, it's really nice to have something to really mark the occasion. And that's what, when I was watching your stories, I was like, oh, how lovely that was happening with your girls and away and in a sort of time away from everything else. It felt like a real sort of ceremony almost, you know, it was brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, because who was telling me about the, is it the closing of the bones or the wrapping of the bones sort of thing?
It's amazing.
And someone said you need to have something like that as well, that I was going to say, I haven't been touched much really in the last few months. And like, yeah, I feel now that you can have massages now, hallelujah. I want to, like, a really deep tissue massage, I think, just to kind of close the bones and
move it all.
Exactly.
I want to talk to you, if it's okay, about all the amazing sort of body confidence work you've done, to be honest.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm talking about it for myself because I don't talk about this much, and I probably won't talk about this a lot more after right now, but I find it hard even to say it, to be honest with you, but I have a long life of being overweight and I am the same size as you, Ellen. I'm an 18.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but it makes me feel emotional even thinking about this. So I'm going to have to hold it in because I am a bit of a cry at times.
Oh, no. Now I'm going to cry.
I was really badly bullied as a child at school about my weight. I was a child who had a lot of puppy fat. And then I grew very tall very quickly, and I have spent a bit of time with a therapist talking about this, and she said, you know, if we hadn't drawn attention to the weight at the time, perhaps it would have never become a thing for you. But unfortunately, that didn't happen, and it absolutely did. And I've really, really struggled with my own personal fat phobia journey, which revolves basically around me. It's the Alexis Fat Phobia show. It's nobody else. It's just me. And I see you doing work like your podcast, Fat Love Good, which is amazing. I remember, and I knew you already from the Scummy Mummies, but it was actually a friend of mine who, so we're a similar size, and she was the one who'd seen your Helen Wears a Size 18 Instagram and the, you know, back when you started it, and sent a link to me. And then I started following that. And I suppose I just want to thank you for having it out there, for talking about it, you know, openly, for not letting that shame and guilt that I seem to have in my life stop you from having a voice for the bigger lady.
And
seeing it from another side. And I wonder also, how the hell did you get to this place of feeling, you know, so good about yourself, which you should do because you're amazing. And I feel like I should feel like that, and I don't.
Everybody's amazing. Everyone has an
amazing
body. It's not just me.
I can't about myself, though.
No, exactly. And it's a really big thing. It's like when Becky and I were talking about accepting help. It's about accepting yourself and accepting who you are. And I think comedy has had a huge influence. Like the fact that we stand up in cat suits and no one laughs. I mean, everybody laughs. But that women, it was one of these things that grew. We just like, because Ellie and I don't have any shame. We're like, what can we wear that's really funny? And we just saw these gold cat suits on Amazon.
Of course, your cat suits.
I love those cat suits.
Amazing.
They had this amazing effect. And like women going, it's so nice to see a body like mine on stage. And as Sarah Millican said, I've got a before body, not an after body. Like when you see before and after. And I was like, yeah, this is my body. I've had two children. I'm loved. I'm funny. I'm successful. My body doesn't define who I am. It doesn't make or break what I do. And I just, yeah, it took a long time because I was really badly bullied. I'm covered in stretch marks, always been fat, always been big. But I just made a decision to not let that stop me doing stuff. Yeah. And also, I think what I've seen in the last couple of years is that now fashion brands have got curve ranges. They've got, there's just much more fun clothes as well. Yeah. And I think that's changed a lot because, you know, I just thought I was going to be wearing leggings and, you know, tunics for the rest of my life. But now you can buy clothes that make you feel sexy, that are happy clothes, you know. That account, Helen Wears a Size 18, and doing the podcast feels like a real privilege because I get messages every day from women going, I just wore a bikini for the first time in 20 years, or I've just bought myself this dress, or they share a jumpsuit, or the messages I get from women make me cry. Yeah. They really make me cry.
They do.
We just got to cry this whole podcast. But it's so important to look after yourself and love what you wear and feel confident and all that sort of stuff. And I know it shouldn't be, it doesn't matter what you look like, but you got to find that joy in yourself, even if it's definitely a pair of earrings or bright pink lipstick or something like that. That, yeah, it is a really important, it's not a frivolous thing because it's you know, it can really start your day off well. You're like, oh, I look really cute today, or, you know, I'm going to dye my hair this colour or whatever. And you don't have to spend much. Like, you might just buy a really nice lippy from Superdrug and go, this is making me feel great. And so just like tiny little interventions of love for yourself is just really important.
I love a black dress. I've got to be honest, I'm wearing like a black tunic dress right now.
Yeah.
But there's been a couple of those you've put up and I've gone and bought myself, treated myself to a little couple of numbers.
Yeah, and I usually only put up stuff that I know I could probably afford if I was a working mum of two. And so I keep the things, but also I try and support lots of independent brands and people send me stuff. And I was like, yeah, of course I'll promote you. And then they'll go, oh, we just sold out all our earrings because you posted it. And that feels brilliant. Like a really nice way I can contribute and support other women and other makers. So that's been a really nice thing. And I set up that Instagram separately to Scummy Mummies because the tone of that is very different to Scummy. I mean, I'm still trying to be kind of light, but sometimes my posts are quite sincere.
Yes.
And I feel like it just needed a separate account. And people, when they go to Helen Wears a Size 18, they know what they're going to get. You know,
Same with your podcast, Fat Little Good. You know, you go there and you talk about some of the hard feelings and you talk about what it is to, you know, be a woman who's bigger living in a fat phobic world and how that can feel and stuff, and learning to fall in love with yourself again, which aren't we all entitled to feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely. We're all gorgeous and glorious. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I have days where I go, oh God, you look 400. And you know, wow, that moustache is really coming along nicely. But also it's about being kind to yourself and sort of saying, I'll probably feel better tomorrow, or it's all right to feel like that today. You don't have you don't have to feel fabulous and love yourself every moment of the day, and that's okay.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, and I you know, whatever I feel about myself, I don't wang on about it in front of my kids. I walk around it. I walk around naked, always have done. Totally. And I've got two sons and a daughter, Helen, and I walk around the house happily in the nude. And I'm like, I actively want my daughter to see my real body. I want my sons to know that this is what a woman can look like. Do you know what
I
mean?
She has pubic hair, son. She has pubic hair.
So I think it's important. Obviously, I'll come to my son. My eldest son's 9, so I think he's getting to the point now where he's like, oh, and that's fair enough.
It is, but
enough,
it's so mother. Important.
Yeah.
I remember when Ella was about 4, because I was 6 months postnatal, I think, with Izzy, and I was getting dressed in the morning, and she really like didn't mean anything by it, but she really harmlessly went, "Mummy, you didn't tuck it in." And I was like, what? And it was my tummy. She meant I meant to tuck it in my jeans. And it was so funny. I was immediately like, ow. Oh. But then I looked at her and realised it was just a statement. There was no meaning behind it at all. No. She was basically, you know, because I used to tuck her, you know, her tops in her trousers for her and all that kind of thing. So she was just saw this bit of tummy hanging over and was just trying to be helpful. And I was a bit like, and I thought, she's not questioning my body. She's just going, you got a bit of tummy you need to put back in your jeans there, mum, you know. And I just thought, oh, bless her. They just, that's what we need, isn't it? To unpick all that crap we've been fed and go back to where you're that age and you just accept your body. Like, there's no stuff put on you. It's kind of,
do you remember, Becky, when Wilf, who's my youngest, when he was about three, he was giving me a cuddle and he got hold of my back fat and he went, what is this, mummy? You know, that little bit that hangs underneath the bra.
Oh, yeah, that's lovely. Is it
a boobie?
Awesome.
Yes, that love. It's my third and my fourth breast. It would be quite handy to have a couple of extra breasts, wouldn't it?
So, Helen, we finish every podcast episode with the same question that we ask all our guests. So if you could add a note to a mother box headed out for a new mother with your best bit of advice in it, what would it be?
I would say once a month, get a takeaway in, a bottle of Prosecco, and invite over two good friends.
Nice.
And make that compulsory.
Love it.
Oh, fantastic.
Perfect. Oh, thank you so much, Helen, for coming on. It's been lovely. It's been really nice to chat to you.
Absolute delight. I didn't want it to end. You girls are amazing. And on behalf of mums, thank you for writing your books and doing what you do. The work is so important. So thank you for having me on your wonderful show.
Thank you, darling.
Oh,
take
I love
care,
you guys.
Now.
All
See
the
you
best.
Again. Bye.
Thanks once again to Helen Thorne for coming on the show and being such a brilliant guest. She's nothing short of a breath of fresh air. If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about the work that we do, look out for our books, The Little Book of Self-Care for New Mums and The Little Book of Self-Care for Mums-to-Be, where we will talk further about birth, parenthood, relationships and much more.
Join us again next week for more chats with another amazing guest. Do let us know what you thought over on Instagram and please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. See you next time on Notes from the Mother Box.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.